Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3, for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 22, delivered on April 19, 2017. The title of this lecture is Component Costs of Capital.
Today, Component Costs of Capital. Now, in the last lecture, I actually showed you one of the component costs, the cost of debt. And just to make sure you know, again, this has to do with the costs of the different kinds of capital. Component costs of capital. Now, on the debt side, the cost of debt after taxes to the company, this is what I did last time, is 1 minus the company's marginal tax rate times the cost of debt that the borrower is charged, that the company is charged. And I went through that the last time. And before I go on any further, whenever a company issues some kind of security to raise money, whether it's debt, preferred stock, or common stock, it's going to have to pay a fee to the investment bankers or to someone like that. So, for example, if you were to want to raise money through an issue of common stock, say you want to sell common stock 5 million shares at $10 a share, you want to do that. Now, I, as an investment banker, if you meet my criteria, I would take care of it for you. I would actually buy it from you and then sell it to my client. So you wouldn't have to worry. But the problem is I'm going to take a float. I'm going to take money for doing that for you. So you would not get the whole $50 million. You get the $50 million minus my float, minus my fee. So when you issue new common stock, it can be pretty expensive. Now, this is the cost of debt. We don't usually include a cost of commons, of a float cost in debt, because debt is actually very cheap to get investment bankers to sell for you. They don't charge you much, so we don't usually even include that flotation cost. You'd see somewhere in it minus F, minus the float, which is oftentimes counted as a percentage. But with debt, you don't see the minus F because there's no F in there because they just don't, investment bankers don't charge that much. Now, on the equity side, there are actually three different sources of equity. There are three different sources of equity. There is, first of all, the one that every company should be using most. That's the equity that they make at the bottom line of their earnings statements. We call that internally generated equity. Internally generated equity. That's your money that you make in your company. That's the money you make in your company. Now, if you run through that money and you still need money, there are two other ways that you can get money. One is through externally generated. In other words, you sell new common stock. Externally generated equity means the money that you would get from selling common stock. That's going to be more expensive than the internally generated because here's where you're gathering new owners. dollars. And they're going to be more expensive primarily because to get them, you have to pay something to the brokers. So for example, if I've got $10 at the bottom line of my income statement, well, all I've got is the cost of the equity cost of the $10 that I owe the shareholders. But if I were to actually run through that and I still need money so I can go out and sell common stock to new customers, to new owners, well, that would be the price of the stock minus money that I would have to give to the broker, to the investment bankers. So it's going to be more expensive to get money from the external world than it is to get money from yourself. So that's why I talk about this. These are all equities right here. And then there's one more that really doesn't matter whether it's internal or external. It's pretty cheap money. It's called preferred stock. Preferred equity. It's low yield, relatively low risk stuff. And you don't need to worry. Whether or not it's existing preferred shareholders or you're selling new preferred, it's going to be, even if you have to sell more preferred stock, the investment bankers don't charge you much for it. So we don't have an internally generated and an externally generated because there really is no difference. Now the first of these, what is its cost is the next thing. This is the component cost of capital. We've got the cost of debt. Now let's get the cost of different kinds of equity. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to use debt and internally generated equity to finance your operations and your projects. That's what you're going to do. And then if you run through your internally generated equity and you run through your cheapest debt, you're going to go first back to the bank and say, can I have some more money at a higher rate? And then when you, at that point, you're also probably going to go, if you've run through all your money internally, then the next thing you're going to do is go to your investment bankers and say, can you sell some common stock for us so we have some extra money to do things with? But internally generated, I'm going to bring up a formula that I showed you early in the semester. The price right now of a share of common stock is a dividend one period out times the expected rate of return on the common stock minus the growth rate of the dividends. That was that dividend growth formula that we did early in the semester. Not too complicated. For calculating the price of a share of common stock, all I'm going to do here is I'm going to turn it around algebraically so that I can solve for the cost of internally generated equity. If I do that, I'm going to find out that the cost of internally generated equity is going to be D1 over P0 plus G. I just cross-multiplied, and then I added G both back to both sides. So this is the cost of internally generated equity. D1, by the way, just to remind you, D1 is the just now dividend grown one period. You have to make sure that you grow it one period. Watch that in the questions that are in the chapter quiz and test. They might give you D1, or they might give you D0 and the growth rate. If they give you the dividend one period from now, that's what you use. But if they give you the dividend that has just been paid, then you have to grow it one period. But one way or the other, notice this. Your cost of your existing shareholders is D1 over P0 plus G. So that means that as your stock price goes up, your internally generated cost of equity capital goes down. The higher the price of your stock, the the cheaper your share existing shareholders are to you. That's why companies actually keep an eye on their stock price, is because if the stock price is falling, that means that their cost of their current shareholders, keeping them in the fold, has gone up when the price goes down. Notice another thing. The higher the dividend you pay those shareholders, the more expensive they are. That's why you don't want to just throw dividend money willy-nilly at them, because it makes your cost of them higher. That's almost a given. Interestingly, though, notice the growth rate. The growth rate of the company's dividends, that drives up, as that goes up, that drives up the cost of capital, your cost of your internally generated capital. Now, the externally generated equity formula is actually just a quick jump. Look, your internally generated equity costs you D1 over P0 plus Z plus G. So the price zero is sort of like the driving force. If you go to an investment banker, remember I said you had a $10 price on your stock? You have to pay, you don't get $10, you get $8.50. For a new shareholder, you have to pay more. So all you do for the cost of new equity is write the same formula, except that you subtract out the float cost from the price. So the cost of new equity is D1 over the quantity P0 minus the float plus G. Now, sometimes they'll say the float as a number. Okay, you got $50 share stock, so the investment bankers are going to charge you $4 a share. Sometimes what they'll do instead is the float will be stated as a percentage of the share price. So if you got a $20 stock and the brokers are charging you 10%, so that would mean that you get $10 minus $2, or $18. What this means is that if you go to investment bankers, the more they charge you, the higher your cost of externally generated equity. The more they charge you, the higher their the cost of externally generated equity. Now, there are sort of like rules on how much the investment bankers can charge. But I'm not sure if I already told you this. Did I tell you the story of the airline that that my group financed or almost financed? Okay. This was back in when I was really in the thick of the consulting, and we were bringing rain. I was a rainmaker. Well, there was a group, small group of us who were rainmakers, which means that we brought money to the table. Not our own. We weren't stupid. We were getting the money. I didn't know from where, but I found out, and so I'm not in that business anymore. But anyway, I worked with a crew of young men just a little older than you, very brash, very smart, very risk-taking, to put it euphemistically. And we had told me that we were going to meet at the Atlanta airport to pick up a possible client. The client needed, the client needed $5 million. The client's idea was that he was going to buy up all these old jets that had been put out of service by Lufthansa. And they were some MD of some kind. And he was going to buy these up at really low prices, and then he was going to offer a contracting out service to the United States Postal Service, to DHL, to UPS, FedEx, whoever, to subcontract and haul packages for them on these jets, which had all the seats taken out. And he was going to need $5 million to do this, to get this all going. I think that was going to buy him like six or seven of these aircraft. And so we went down there. It was the weirdest thing, because I didn't realize at that point airports have these huge back lots with all of these trailers and old beat-up airplanes and stuff like that. So It was late in the afternoon when we arrived. We all met there, and we went back to this back lot. And it was just sort of like this apocalyptic scene of old airplanes with wings off them and these big, huge trailers with lights on in them. People were living in them and doing business out of them. And we found the one that we were supposed to go to, and we went in. And it was just this really creepy guy. Gray beard, steely blue eyes. He had a cigarette. And he said, "Gentlemen, come in." The whole place was just lined with documents, binders, and things like that. As it turned out, those were all the forms that he was filling out with or filing with the FAA to get this thing started. Incredible genius of a man. And he just kind of sat there talking about his vision. And for some reason, he creeped me out because he said, "I like you." He pointed to me. "You've got the vision." Oh, God. And but he did have good single malt. And we talked, got through all the preliminaries, did the dance. "How much do you need?" "Okay, $5 million. "Okay, good. We're going to raise $7 million and we'll have your $5 million for you. We're going to raise $7 million in equity, sell stock in a type of offering called a Reg D 506 to avoid a lot of SEC disclosures." And he said, "No, I need five." And I said, "Yeah, we're raising seven." And he just kind of looked at us like he didn't understand. Why did we need seven? We were going to take $2 million, and it was going to be on his tab. Float on that one was 40%, basically. And he just absolutely hit the roof. "You rip off, you sons of bitches," and all that kind of stuff. And we all, we had the act down. We just got up, and we thanked him, and we walked out, walked back toward the limo that we had commanded for that evening. And one of the one young man and I, Jeff and I, walked really fast. The other one, Dan, walked slow. Okay? And so, obviously, the guy came out, running out, and he caught Dan. Wait. And so they mumbled. We knew it was a script. He and this owner of this idea, they mumbled and mumbled, and then Dan just kind of comes over to us, and he starts talking, and we're all, waving our arms, and we're pretending to yell at Dan and all this kind of stuff. And then finally, Jeff just turns around and he says, "Like that." And I just stood there looking kind of stupid, and Dan went back over to him. We said, "Okay, 6.5. That poor old son of a bitch looked so relieved that his dream was going to come true. Hell, we could have probably said 6.9, and he would have, once he knew that we were the only hope he had. We were rainmakers, but we were bastards. And so we did the deal. And so there is, right there, this man is in the hole, equity-wise. $7 million for just a, 6.5 million, as it turned out, for a lousy $5 million. That's float. You see how he's in the hole doing that? This is the same trick that these saving artists of these big corporations do, like the genius group that saved Staples. What they did was they borrowed for Staples hundreds of millions of dollars that included their consulting fees. The company was on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars, of which they would get only a fraction of it, but they would still owe all of the money. And that's what float is. Float is dirty. Float is a nasty thing. There are rules on it now that keep you from doing things like we did, or that a lot of those guys did back in the day. Oh, one last thing. As it turned out, the project never got off the ground because the FAA discovered in its research, in its review of the company and its founder, that he had been arrested in 1983 landing a DC-3 on a deserted airstrip in Louisiana. The DC-3 was stuffed with marijuana bales, which he said he was a contractor for the CIA. And what his job was to bring money in to the bring pot in from Nicaragua or from South of the Caribbean. The money would be paid for the marijuana, which would then go to Iran to buy weapons, and the weapons would then be provided to the anti-communist guerrillas called the anti-Sandinista guerrillas in Nicaragua. It was a three-way, and he was caught, and the CIA disavowed it. Only a few years later was the whole story blown open that this had happened. It was called the Iran-Contra affair. If you want to look it up. He was just one of the mules, and he was caught. He was put in prison for a couple of years. He swore to God he was a contractor for the CIA and NOC, and they said, "No, we don't do things like that." So anyway, he was denied his airline on that basis. Who knew? So there's a cautionary lesson. Don't fly DC-3s full of pot for the CIA. Anyway, moving on. Preferred equity. This one's an easy one. The formula for the price of a constant, of a zero growth preferred share of stock is the dividend it pays, which is the fixed forever, divided by the rate of return on that preferred share of stock. I showed you that earlier in the semester. Turn that around, and the component cost of preferred equity capital comes out to be the constant dividend that is paid every year forever divided by the current price of the preferred stock. It floors me to this day that preferred stock is not more used. I mean, if you look at these formulas, after a minute you might see that the component cost of preferred stock is actually pretty darn low. I mean, it's in the territory of debt. And yet, it is just not used that often by a lot of companies. They go for the sex appeal of common stock offerings every time. I mean, Facebook, it just kind of amazes me. A company like Facebook, it paid a fortune to raise that capital from an IPO. And I think, well, if you're going to do an IPO, why didn't you do an IPO of preferred stock? It would have been cheaper. The component cost of capital would be cheaper, but it didn't have the sex appeal of a common stock offering. Also, perhaps, and I'm speculating somewhat on this, investment bankers don't charge hardly anything to sell preferred stock for you. That's why I don't have a minus F or anything, new versus existing, because it's such a cheap thing to sell. And there's almost a suspicion I have that investment bankers steer companies away from raising external capital through the use of preferred stock because they don't make nearly as much money off those kinds of offerings. But there you have the four cost component costs of capital. Now, you put those together, and essentially, you get this massive, but not all that hard formula for the weighted average cost of capital. It would be the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt that the company has in its liabilities, plus the weight of existing stock times the cost of existing stock, plus the weight of new stock that they would raise money through, times the cost of new stock, plus the weight of preferred, times the cost of preferred. And putting all those together, you would get your weighted average cost of capital. Now, oftentimes, just for the purposes of teaching this, what we'll do is we'll throw these three, WS case of S plus WN case of N plus WP case of P, all in together as the weight of equity times the cost of equity. I mean, just kind of blend them together to save yourself a lot of pain in finding out each one. I mean, it's actually not that easy to break them down. You saw me do it for just debt and equity, right, on Monday. Well, that would have been an awful lot harder to do if I'd actually tried to peel out the different parts of the equity, the existing equity, new equity, and preferred. That would have been a lot like work. So as a general rule, we kind of break the WACC down into the weight of debt in the portfolio times the cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of equity, the combined weight of equity. So in other words, you could say, let's say that case of D for a firm is, let's do 8%. And the combined cost of equity is, 18%. Okay. Now, the capital structure is, let's say, 40% debt, 60% equity. And this company, let's say, is its marginal tax bracket is 25%. Okay? Now we can get its weighted average cost of capital. It's not that hard. I mean, all you do is you say, okay, now the after-tax cost of debt, which is what you have to use, is going to be 8% times 1 minus 0.25, which would be 6%. So now the WACC is going to be the weight of debt, 0.40 times 6%, times 6% plus 0.60 times 18%. So that would be 2.4% plus, I knew that was going to happen, 12.8. Let me do it. I so suck at arithmetic anymore. Okay, 0.6 times 18%. So the weighted average cost of capital of this company is 13.2%. Okay, so that's weighted average cost of capital right there. The thing of it is, though, just to make sure you know, this 40% debt and 60% equity isn't something a company just pulls out of thin air. That would be its best calculation of the weighted of its optimal capital structure. In other words, what I am actually saying here is that this company, percent of debt, 100%, 50%, knows that when the percent of debt is 40%, that would be the bottoming out point of its weighted average cost of capital firm. Curve. If the company used more than 40% debt and less than 60% equity, or if the company used less than 40% debt and more than 60% equity, its weighted average cost of capital would be more. Now, I won't show you in this class how you do that. That gets into some differential equations kind of calculus. But this is the company's goal, is to always, always finance its projects with 40% debt and 60% equity. Because if it used more debt and less equity, or less debt and more equity, the weighted average cost of capital of its project would be higher. And put another way, what this means is that now in the first tier, what the company would be doing is it would take, every time it had a project, it would fund 40% of that project from borrowing, and it would fund 60% of that project from equity. Now, the first borrowings it would do would be pretty cheap. It'd go to the bank, and they'd say, oh, this is your first project, no problem. And the first rung of equity it would use is the money that it had made in its operations. And only when it had run through its cheap debt would it go back for more expensive debt. And then it would, when it ran through more of its money, it would go back. If it ran through all of the money in its that it had made in the business, then it would go sell common stock. That's how it would do it. It would not fund any project. Well, we're just going to pull money out of our checking account. It would never do that. Now, I will show you this with an exercise. And I think I asked someone to be my volunteer. Would you please? We have a story of a company that needs, it has a carriage, and it needs to fund two horses to pull the carriage. But it has to pay a dollar for those horses. This company has a capital structure that is 25% debt, 75% equity. So I go to the treasurer of the company, and I say, can you provide us with a dollar to buy these horses?
Yeah.
Look at those eyes.
Okay. So can you please give me that dollar? No. You have to pull 25 cents from the cash that you've made. Only 25 cents. Now you run over to the bank and you get 75 cents in loans. $0.75 for you, and $0.25 for me. And we have two horses. Financed 25% with equity, cash that the company made, and $0.75 with debt. And there's only one question left for you. Why did I cost only 25 cents? Do you know why? Because I'm a quarter horse. That's all I have for you today. I thank you. Thank you so much.